House Committee on Business and Labor, and I'm going to open a... I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3162.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3162 makes discrimination against an employee who reports a violation of state or federal laws, rules, or regulations, an unlawful employment practice. You have in front of you, members, a -1 amendment adds a new provision to the bill, clarifying that an employee can file a civil action in circuit court as outlined in current statute, and the amendment also establishes that the measure applies to actions commenced on or after the bill's effective date.
And we have Representative Stiegler, and she's brought someone with her who will introduce themselves and tell us what we're doing around here.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Judy Stiegler, and I am the chief sponsor of House Bill 3162. To my right is Charisse Roney and...
Paul LeBaron.
Thank you. They're my technical experts. At any rate, thank you for this opportunity. I was approached early on in the session about sponsoring this piece of legislation, and after conferring with several folks in my own community as well as some folks around this building, I was more than happy to sign on. Essentially, what House Bill 3162 accomplishes is putting private employees on equal footing with public employees at this stage of the game who already have a whistleblowing provision in ORS 659A. And this sort of levels the playing field for the private employee out there who is in a situation where they have been privy to and are aware of violations of state, federal law, or rule or regulation, and have tried to do the right thing by bringing that to the attention of a superior in the chain of command and have ended up paying the price either through demotion, reduction in salary, or loss of employment altogether. And this is really a simple bill from the standpoint that literally what it does is it makes it very clear that the private employee has the same rights as a public employee would under for whistleblowing, the vernacular that we use in these situations. You have before you also the -1 amendments, which essentially it was a drafting error in the beginning, and if you'll note that the actual bill itself doesn't relate to, it talks about Chapter 659A, but it doesn't tie it in anywhere, specifically remedies or anywhere. So this brings it in under 659A.885, which is the civil action part of Chapter 659 dealing with the various remedies that are available under a civil action in this regard. And it essentially what it does is give to this class of employees who may report an error, may report some violation of a federal law, state rule or regulation, gives them the same remedies that otherwise would be available under those provisions. So the folks to my right have sort of the tales of woe and the horror stories and the practical knowledge of where this has come into play, so I'd be happy to answer any questions. But my main motivation here was to provide to the private employee who is trying to do the right thing the same rights and remedies that are available to our public employees.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative. I think it's the first time you've been to this committee, is it, if I remember?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, welcome. We'd love to have you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Chair Schaffler, members of the community, my name is Charisse Roney, and I'm here in support of House Bill 3162 on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. For years, Oregon law has held public employers accountable for retaliating against, discriminating, or terminating employees who report unlawful activity. But there's no such statutory protection for private employees, as you just heard Representative explain. Employees for non-governmental entities who report unlawful activity to their employers can be disciplined, retaliated against, and terminated without having any rights to hold that employer accountable. Right now, when a private employer
I'm sorry, a private employee calls me or calls one of my colleagues about unlawful conduct that's occurring in their company, and they ask, what should they do? Are they protected if they report to the company the unlawful activity? We have to tell them, no, you're not protected, not if you go to your company. Now, if the violation involves a violation of law, we can advise them to go to the police. Or if it involves an OSHA violation, we can tell them to go to OSHA. And under those limited circumstances, we can tell them, bypass your company, go to these agencies, and you're protected. But those are limited. The passage of House Bill 3162 would provide protection for employees, say, in the food packaging industry, where there's violations of FDA regulations. Think of recent issues involving peanut contamination or milk contamination or other food product contamination. It would provide protection for employees who work for financial institutions, who may report violations of stimulus rules or regulations. It would provide protections for employees who work in car dealers, where perhaps an airbag is not replaced or it's left out completely altogether. And it would provide protection for employees in the healthcare industry who work and are aware of other employees who fail to accurately report treatment or medications that are vital to that particular patient's subsequent healthcare. And these are just a few examples. Laws do change behavior. Consider how far employers have come and evolved in matters of discrimination. Since the passage of civil rights laws, which have made it unlawful to discriminate on the basis of, say, race or disability or pregnancy, companies are much better at educating their management and their employees. They're much better at coming up with good policies. And in many cases, many companies have changed the culture of their company and significantly decreased unlawful discrimination that occurs. House Bill 3162 would protect and encourage employees who report unlawful conduct and apply the law that applies already to government and public employers to the private sector. Now, first and foremost, House Bill 3162 is intended to protect Oregon employees. And one such Oregonian is Kevin Lamson. Kevin worked for a car dealer. He reported unfair trade practices involving fraudulent activity that was illegal, misrepresentations to prospective buyers that violated consumer protection laws. And he refused to condone the behavior. He spoke up, and he was fired. And a jury of his peers heard the case and held in favor of him and found that company responsible for the unlawful conduct. However, the Court of Appeals was forced to reverse that jury verdict by holding that Oregon doesn't have a whistleblower statute that protects private employees. Kevin did the right thing, and he lost his job, and he might not speak up again. I mean, he obviously is disillusioned. It's important that Oregonians not be discouraged from reporting unlawful activity, and I urge you to protect employees who report corporate misconduct and to vote yes on House Bill 3162. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and if you have any questions, I welcome them for myself or my colleagues. So that's after your testimony.
Chairman Schaffler, members of the committee.
Just one moment, please. This is a great time to remind everyone to shut their phones and their gadgets off.
Who is it? I forgot I even had it in my pocket.
Who was it that committed the sin?
All right, go ahead, sir.
On Good Friday, no less.
Okay. I will start again. Chairman Schaffler, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to come here today and testify. My name is Paul LeBaron, and I reside in Multnomah County. I'm here in support of House Bill 3162, a bill that will level the playing field for all Oregonian employees, or all Oregon employees. I guess I must be nervous. I was hired by RMC Research Corporation in 2006 as a project assistant. In 2008, I had my annual review, and for the second year in a row, I received the company's highest standard. They said that I was excellent, and I significantly and consistently exceeded job expectations. During that annual review, my supervisor told me that I was going to get some new duties, among which were that I was going to be overseeing budgets for the Healthy Schools Project. The first time I looked over the budgets, the timesheets for the Healthy Schools Project was in March of 2008. In April of 2009, a memo was attached to one of the timesheets. And in this memo, the document editor of our company said that she worked 29 hours on my project. However, only a 5-page document was given to her during that time. I went to my project manager shortly after that, and I said, you need to look at the hours that are being charged to our project by the document editor. It was over a month later that I went back again and looked at the charges that this person was making to, the document editor was making to the project. And on a different project, she had put down that she had worked 24 hours. However, no document had reached her desk. Again, I went to the project manager and I said, you need to look at this person's charges. They are in excess of what we have given her. To my surprise, the project manager came back and said, oh, no, they're fine. Don't worry about it. These are perfectly in line with what I would expect. I was shocked. And I didn't know if she were truly not seeing the truth of it or if she were trying to protect this person from someone coming back to her and saying, you know, what you've done is submitted fraudulent timesheets. It was many months later that I put together a memo. And in this memo, I documented the hours that she had worked, the documents that she had been given, and how discrepant these two things were. It was on February 11th of this year that I received notice from the company stating that RMC Research was terminating me. And I'd like to read why they terminated me. This memo serves notice that RMC Research is terminating your employment, effective immediately, for conducting an unauthorized and covert investigation into the behavior of another RMC Research employee. So let me cover two of those charges, the charge that it was unauthorized. First of all, when this memo fell into the hands of my employer, my boss's boss, he asked me, why are you even doing this? It's not part of your job. And then I told him, no, this assignment had been given to me. I had been asked to look at budgets. And his response to me was, well, if it's not written down, then it's not valid. During my termination meeting, I again brought up this fact that I was told that I was to look at budgets. And sitting at the table with me was the person who had told me that this was my job assignment. And I asked this person to say, would you please tell this man that I was told to do this? And after I finished this question, my boss's boss said, you don't have to answer this. And I knew right then they were not looking for the truth. They were just looking to get rid of me. When I was fired, I immediately went to websites and I started looking for lawyers. And I happened to see that a place that I worked for, Sussman Shank, had lawyers in their employee that did labor law. And so I called them and I told them what had happened to me. They called me back and later that day they said, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for you. However, if you'd like to talk to another attorney, we suggest that you talk to so-and-so. And so I did. I called that attorney and I said, look, this is what's going on. And she gave me the example of Kevin whatever and how he did not get justice through this system. and how I could not expect to get justice through this system, and why they would not take on my case. Well, right now, it's been almost 2 months that I've been out of work. And I have been at least wise enough to follow the advice that you should have 6 months of savings in your of living expenses in your savings account, and I have done that. So I know that I'm not going to that I can get by even in these hard times. But it occurs to me that I have two friends, both of whom are single mothers, and if this situation were forced on them, that one of them would be sitting, might be sitting here and struggling, paying the mortgage, and because she lives from paycheck to paycheck. And another friend who's a single mom, she wouldn't have this problem because she's a public employee. And the injustice of that just really frustrates me. I do have, as of yesterday, a temporary job. So I've got a job now that's going to pay me more than $10 an hour less than I'm used to earning, and no benefits. And so I'm asking you to pass this bill. And in my statement I say, I wish that I could have my day in court, but what I really wish is that this bill had been passed and in effect January 1 of this year. Because if it had been in effect, I can't possibly believe that my supervisors and my employers would have concocted this set of lies as to what I had done. And I wouldn't be here today. And instead, I would be working 40 hours a week at my job and back and having my normal life. I thank you all sincerely for giving me the opportunity to do this, because I know that at some point I'm going to be sitting in front of somebody and they're going to say, a future employer, and they're going to say to me, have you ever been fired before? And because I have this testimony in front of me, I'm going to be able to say, yes, I was fired. But not because I did something wrong, but because I did something right. Thank you. And if you have any questions, please, I'm happy to answer them.
I do have one question, but before I open it up to everybody else, I thank you, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this in. You know, there's a lot of talk, and we're working a lot on companies that are out there just cheating, scamming, ripping people off, and treating them like dirt. And I think this bill addresses some of those problems. People aren't paying their taxes. They're not withholding, paying people's withholdings. They're scoffing the law on safety, on labor, who they're ripping off is not just the workers and the customers, but legitimate business people who are paying their bills, who are carrying their load for them, and while people like you, sir, are caught up in it all. And this bill is prospective, not retrospective. This bill isn't even going to help you at all, yet you're here today testifying on its behalf. That's really what I appreciate. Any questions of these representatives? You want to make a comment?
Just real briefly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's exactly why I was willing to bring this piece of legislation forward, is because these situations, there should be some way to seek some kind of remedy for these folks who do strive to do the right thing, and they should not be put in these situations. In reality, this gentleman was a watchdog for the rest of us for public dollars, and we need more of them, not fewer of them. We need to encourage and not discourage, and you're right, this is prospective. This goes forward. This doesn't help him in any way, shape, or form.
I do have one technical question, though. This bill doesn't force any worker or employee into disclosing anything. Is that correct?
No, that's a good distinction. And in looking at the, Mr. Chair, thank you, Chairman Schaffler, the answer to that question is no. And in comparison to the OSHA statute, that actually, to the contrary, or ORS 654062 says every employee should notify the employer of any violation of law, regulation, or standard pertaining to health and safety. This statute, House Bill 3162, does not put that same should in there.
Very good.
So it's a good distinction.
Thank you. Questions of this panel? Representative Thatcher, please.
Thank you. I was just wondering how many other states had this provision.
About one-third of the states have something, not quite apples to apples. Some have it limited to certain industries, but right now 16 states have it, a whistleblower statute.
Thank you. Any further questions? And we're not going to work the bill today. We don't have the paperwork for the fiscal and the revenue and all that stuff. So, but I intend to if we have the votes. So,
thank you.
Without any further questions, thank you for coming, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
All righty then. I'm just going to go right down the line here. Michael Dale, Patricia Laguna. Then after those good folks, Kate Newhall and Melissa Unger. And that's all I have on the list, so if you want to testify, let me know. Are you, are one of you interpreting for the other?
Yes,
okay, very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, ma'am. Let her go first. Unless you were going to introduce her.
I was going to introduce.
Okay, forgive me. Go right ahead, then.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have a few comments, but first I thought it would be good to hear the testimony of Patricia Hirado.
Michael, did you tell us who you are?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Michael Dale. I'm with the Northwest Worker Justice Project. I'd like to introduce Patricia Gerardo, who is, that would be G-E-R-A-R-D-O, who was affected by practices that would be remedied by this bill. Lindsay Johnson from our office will be assisting her in her testimony.
Very good. Thank you.
Representante Schaffler y demás representantes, les agradezco la oportunidad de dar mi testimonio.
Chair Schaffler and members of the community, I thank you for the opportunity to give my testimony.
Mi nombre es Patricia Laguna de Gerardo.
My name is Patricia Laguna de Gerardo.
He vivido muchos años en este, junto con mi familia en el condado de Washington.
I have lived for many years with my family in Washington County.
En mi país estudié la carrera de ciencias de la comunicación, la cual practico hace más de 30 años trabajando en el área social.
In my country, I studied communication sciences, which I have been practicing for more than 30 years in the social area.
En el año de 1994 vine a este país con mi hijo de 5 años.
In 1994, I came to this country with my 5-year-old son.
Y tuve la oportunidad de conocer el programa de G-Star.
And I had the opportunity to get to know the programs of Head Start.
Ingresé como madre del programa, como voluntaria, como para trabajar como voluntaria en un trabajo participativo.
I got involved as a mother in the volunteer program in participatory work.
Que es uno de los reglamentos que debe de haber en el comité de padres que nos daba la oportunidad de tomar decisiones.
One of the rules of Head Start is that there should be a committee of parents that is allowed to participate in making decisions.
Como eran las de desarrollar pólizas del programa que afecten a las familias y a los niños.
Decisions such as developing policies that affect them and their children.
Así pues, registré a mi hijo en el programa y estuve un año como padre voluntario, ocupando el puesto de presidenta del Concilio Político de Padres a nivel estatal.
So I registered my son in the program and I worked as a volunteer for 1 year in the position of president of the parental committee at the state level.
En 1995 dejé de trabajar como voluntaria para ser parte del personal como trabajadora social.
In 1995, I left my volunteer work in order to become part of the staff.
Y unos años después como coordinadora de envolvimiento de padres.
First as a social worker and some years later as the coordinator of parental involvement.
Como coordinadora, uno de mis deberes principales era asegurar que el comité de padres funcionara adecuadamente de acuerdo a las normas de ejecución de GESTAR.
As the parental coordinator, one of my responsibilities was to ensure that the parental committee was functioning adequately with respect to the rules about parental involvement.
En el año de 2006, hubo un cambio en la dirección de las oficinas centrales.
In 2006, there was a change in the administration of the central offices.
Y las personas que ingresaron allí cambiaron la filosofía del programa,
and the people that started working there changed the philosophy of the program,
quitando poco a poco la participación de los padres,
taking away little by little the participation of the parents.
Esto lo pudimos ver como no haciendo decisiones compartidas.
We could see this in that they weren't allowing shared decisions to be made.
Desaparecer el comité de los condados,
and they were making the parental committees in the counties disappear.
Y otras más decisiones.
And other decisions.
Fuera de las reglas de GESTA.
Outside of these rules of the program of Head Start.
En el trayecto de los tres últimos años con esta dirección.
During the last 3 years with this new administration.
Viendo, pisoteando y violando los reglamentos federales y estatales de las normas de GESTA.
Seeing them stepping on and violating the federal rules and regulations of Head Start.
Les hice ver en varias ocasiones.
I made people see it many times.
A mi supervisor inmediato, así como a la administración general.
Talking with my supervisor as well as the general administration.
Las violaciones y los abusos que estaban haciendo.
The violations and abuses that they were doing.
Pero ellos utilizaron muchos caminos.
But they used many different paths.
Para evitar que yo los siguiera censurando.
In order to stop me from continuing to censure them.
Y por hacer valer los derechos de las familias.
And to stop me from making them value the rights of the families.
Entre sus amenazas.
Among their threats.
Era que podría conservar mi puesto mientras me quedara callada.
They told me that I could keep my job as long as I stayed quiet.
Que tenía que seguir las órdenes sin cuestionarlas.
That I had to follow their orders without questioning them.
Que me subía al autobús o me bajaba y me iba.
That I should get on the bus or get off and get out.
Que les ayudara a manejar al comité de padres para que no los cuestionaran y me dejarían en paz.
That I would help them manage the parental committee so that the parents weren't asking questions and that they would leave me to work in peace.
Después de 14 años de entrega al trabajo.
After 14 years of entering this work,
el cual veía como parte importante de mi vida,
which I saw as a very important part of my life,
pues aprendí a amarlo y a querer al programa cuando era bien llevado.
I learned to love and to take care of the program when it was being well led.
Y la única manera de eliminar mi posición de la compañía, de la organización,
the only way they had to get rid of my job,
fue el de desaparecerla.
Was to make it disappear.
Para después de 15 días ocupar la otra persona, nada más con diferente nombre de la posición.
But only 15 days later, they filled the same position with a different person, just putting a different name on the position.
Siento una gran tristeza por haber perdido mi trabajo de tantos años al querer deparar todas estas violaciones.
I am hugely sad to have lost my job of so many years for simply trying to stop them from making the violations of the federal rules.
Espero que para que esto lo tomen en cuenta.
I hope that you take this into consideration.
Que para esta propuesta más bien para proteger a los trabajadores,
and so that this proposal can protect other workers,
que pasan situaciones similares a la mía,
and similar situations as mine.
Muchas gracias, amiga. Michael.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Michael Dale from the Northwest Worker Justice Project. The Northwest Worker Justice Project represents workers who are what we call contingent workers, workers that are sort of outside of the mainstream of employment. Their only security frequently is the good graces of the boss that they happen to be working with in whatever short-time position they have in the hopes that they can get on permanently. It puts immense pressure on them if they are not able to speak up about violations of law that they may observe. In addition to Ms. Arardo's testimony, I'm submitting written testimony on behalf of another client of the project who stood up for other workers and insisting that his employer, a concrete contractor, provide work breaks. And basically, he was told, of course, BOLI regulations require that work breaks be given at regular periods during the day. Concrete work's pretty hard work, and to have a chance to go to the restroom, get something to drink is pretty important. He was insisting upon that and ultimately was told that you have to either, they were upset with his continuing to complain. He could be quiet and keep his job, or other than that, he was out. And so he's now unemployed. He's not unemployed. He's found another job, and for that reason, he's not here with us today. But I've submitted his written testimony. Workers should not have to pay with their livelihood for simply reporting violations of state or federal law. This is a good bill. We recommend its passage. I understand that it needs the -1 amendments in order to connect up the remedial provisions. We support the adoption of the -1 amendments and urge strongly that this is a good bill and ought to go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee has.
Well, Michael, first of all, thank you for coming. I appreciate your testimony. I've spent a little bit of time pouring concrete, and I know once the pump turns on, it doesn't stop, but if I told the guys I work with that they couldn't have a drink or go to the bathroom, I wouldn't have to fire them. They wouldn't be working for me for very long, so it's most unfortunate. Representative Kanemer.
Mr. Dale, I see in your testimony this is a change in our at-will working. Anyhow, we have at-will employment. Thank you. That's the word I meant to say. What other provisions does this affect or not affect in at-will employment in the state? Because this is a significant change.
Representative Kanemer, it only affects at-will employment to the extent that it recognizes that there are exceptions now to at-will employment. For example, you can fire someone, it's often said, for any reason at all. You can't fire them because they're black. You can't fire them because they made a wage claim. There's certain things that
are age, I think.
Age, religion, some other things that are specified in the law. But other than that, any reason goes, including the fact that they're insisting that you follow the law. And this just adds to the list of the few things that you can't fire someone for, the notion that someone who reports a violation of law cannot be fired solely for that reason.
Did I misunderstand you? Did you say can't fire them for not following the law?
No.
I'm sorry, I must have misunderstood what you
and
said.
And maybe I misspoke, I'm not sure. What I meant to say was that you can't fire someone merely because they have raised a question about your violating the law.
That's what this bill does.
That's what this bill does.
But under current law, that is legal to do.
Yes, that's correct. It's legal to do except in the few situations where we have
that's
a specific prohibition, like OSHA. If you make an OSHA complaint, there's a cause of action for that. If you file a workers' comp claim, there's a cause of action for that. That's recognized. If you file a wage claim, you can't be fired for that. There are a few things specified, but this would basically generally say, in a catch-all kind of way, that if the reason for your firing is that you reported a violation of law or you made a complaint about a violation of law in good faith, then you couldn't be fired solely for that reason.
Further questions? Well, you know, until just recently, you could be fired based on your sexuality. So that was a pretty significant change, too. And I'm certainly not afraid to make significant changes when clearly it's to the benefit of the safety, health, and welfare of the state and the people working in it. Any other Representative Matthews?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Dale, I think you just said what was on my mind, and that was in your comment that you just made on May to file a complaint in good faith. Is that specifically in the bill, or are we looking at potential retaliation of employees? Let's say an employee just has a problem with an employer, period, and they make claims that are false, causing a great deal of inconvenience to the employer, and they're still employed. Does this bill specifically detail the in good faith? I mean, I don't understand them to know that every letter of the law, but I would think that the intent would be to report a violation that's actually occurring and not to create significant inconvenience to their employer.
Representative Matthews, My understanding is that the idea is simply to apply the standards that have been developed in public employment to private companies. The public law has been interpreted by our courts to have a good faith. I mean, you can't just make something up, that you have to have a reasonable good faith belief that the complaint you're making is valid.
Thank you.
Representative Cameron, and on that, before we go to Representative Cameron, yeah, I'm not interested in creating an environment where, you know, every disgruntled employee gets to run up and make a bunch of charges and claims that aren't based on evidence. I'm certainly not interested in that environment, and I most certainly hope that this language does not create that environment. I see smart people nodding their heads no, and that's good. So, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple comments, maybe they turn into questions, but when I look at the language in the bill, it says on line 8, and I'm not sure, I can't find it in the amendments taking care of it, it says that the employee believes, and that's pretty strong language, that the employee believes versus, and I think it's a follow-up to what Rep. Matthew says, and then that it precludes the employer from doing a lot of things just because of an employee's belief. And I'm concerned about that language in here. Second thing is I want to describe for the committee to make sure that everybody in the room understands this today. If an employee has a wage claim or has the things that you're talking about, and in fact maybe previous testimony of a company violating the law, and I think we even heard testimony from an attorney, if they called us today, what would we tell them? Well, you go to Boley or you go to the health department or you go to wherever, because that's the people who have authority over that to do an investigation, to keep it confidential, to protect the employee today. And I want to make that real clear that those things are out there today. And as an employer who wants to do the right thing is going to encourage his employees to come to him or her to point out the problems to avoid those consequences that I just described. Maybe there are some bad employers out there who won't do that, but there is still today, the way our system is set up, the government does a pretty good job of going after bad employers who are violating the law when it's reported to them. And I wanted to make that point on this particular bill.
If I may respond, Representative.
Are you finishing?
Oh,
don't interrupt the representative.
But the real concern I have is the language in the bill that says the employee believes, and it's a follow-up probably to what Representative Matthews is saying there, that we need to have real good cause here.
Representative Cameron. I apologize. In response to the employee believes, there's case law, and I can submit it to the committee afterwards. I don't have it at the tip of my. 20 years ago, I might have remembered it, but I don't remember it today. But I'm quite sure this case law under the public whistleblower statute that requires that belief to be a belief in good faith. It can't be just something someone makes up. If I might comment on the other point about there being government agencies to complain to, that's true, but understand that the result, not with the good employer, not with the responsible employer, but with the employer that needs to be corrected by government regulation, that the result of going to the government agency may well be to cause the employee to be fired because they've given that information and made that report. The government may come in and do something about it, but meanwhile, the employee loses his job, and there's no remedy. And because of that, the net result is the smart employee who's looking after number one has to look at the situation and say, well, this isn't right, I don't like it, but if I'm going to lose my job over it, I'm not going to make that call. And if we've learned anything in the economic collapse of the last several months, it's that we need people to come forward to responsible authorities who know of things that are going awry. I was just reading the Bernie Madoff situation, and I guess he had, you know, he's paying secretaries hundreds of thousands of dollars in his enterprise, probably to keep silence. Well, we ought not to load up the problem with fear of retaliation. Thank you.
And it isn't just the last couple of months. I think Arthur Anderson and Enron may have been able to use a couple of these employees too. Representative Edwards, and then we're going to move on. We have Boley here too. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share some of the concerns that have been expressed by folks on the committee, but I also, in thinking about it, I'm thinking that there are probably a number of employees who report to government agencies, you know, cases of malfeasance and law-breaking and fraud and whatnot, and they probably do it anonymously. And this type of protection may, in fact, encourage more internal reporting so that the company, maybe even higher up the food chain than whoever's the bad actor, can deal with it internally and can right their own ship without the involvement of the government. So that's just one thing I'm not sure that's really been raised here today.
A good point, though. Thank you. All right, I'm going to let you folks go.
Thank you
very much. I do appreciate it. Thanks for coming.
All righty. I have Kate Newhall and Melissa Unger. And is there anybody else that wants to testify on this bill today? All right. Ladies, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kim Hall, and I'm the Legislative and Communications Director at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Bill 3162, which would protect private sector employers who are discriminated against for reporting violations of the law and safety dangers. The Bureau sees this legislation as a natural and necessary extension of the whistleblower protections already provided to public sector employees. Protection of employment rights is part of the Bureau's core mission, and the Civil Rights Division already enforces the whistleblowing protections provided to public employees, and we see 3162 as a long overdue protection for those private sector employees. One point of clarification that I just would like to make is that the House Bill 3162 does include in it, if you look on lines 8, good faith reporting and of information that the employee believes to be evidence of a violation of state or federal law or rule or regulation, and that's the same standard that currently exists in the public sector whistleblowing protections in ORS 659A203. And I'm just going to be really brief. I don't want to repeat the testimony that we've heard before us, but the Bureau also supports the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments, which simply align the enforcement provisions of House Bill 3162 with the existing enforcement mechanisms in ORS 659A and other protected classes. Thank you very much for the opportunity to offer our support today of House Bill 3162. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Melissa, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Unger, and I am representing SEAU Local 503. And we actually represent both public employees and private employees, and I wanted to take the opportunity to testify on this bill because the whistleblower statute for public employees, while I don't think it has been used all that many times, it has given, in a couple of instances actually in recent memory, the courage for workers to come forward with some of their problems that they've had at occasional agencies that have actually done a lot of great work for the state of Oregon, I think, in terms of making sure that our agencies are running to top notch. And we believe that this should be extended to private employees as well. And, you know, I think that this is a great bill, and we really just wanted to take this opportunity to come up here and say that, you know, I think that this bill will ensure that businesses that are breaking the laws are held accountable for breaking the laws, and that businesses that are not, which are a majority of the businesses in the state, continue to operate freely.
Thank you. Representative Cameron.
Thank you. Ms. Newell, do you see any difference in the size of the employer? It strikes me that, you know, and I'm sympathetic. I think people who are doing the right thing shouldn't be penalized.
On the other hand, you know, I remember when I used to do a lot of counseling with people, working for somebody that you dislike is a very difficult chore as well. And working in hostile environments is an ugly experience for all sides, and one that's deserved by anyone who's done the wrong thing. Don't misunderstand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder, do you see, is it appropriate to put some kind of a size or something? I mean, one of the reasons this works pretty well in government is we have a lot of places mm-hmm. we can move people if there's an issue. We also have a process to get rid of those who are doing something wrong, whereas in a private action, we wouldn't have that authority. And I'm just trying to understand how this works.
There's in this bill, there's not any distinction in the size of employer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I guess I would echo what Melissa said, that we think that, and what we honestly see at the Bureau of Labor, is that most employers are, in fact, good employers and you know, aren't looking to discipline their employees. Although we do feel that it is an important protection to have if employees in the private sector are reporting in good faith violations of law or safety standards.
Please, Mr. Chairman, a different question, I guess. You know, I don't really understand how large a change this is in at-will employment, but I'm surprised there isn't someone from AOI or NFIB or some of the business organizations to speak to this matter. Is there no one that's come forward on this issue?
Nope, because I think they realize it's just a good, sound bill.
Well, I think it's pathetic if they're not going to step up and say whatever it is they think, support or lack thereof.
It's a public hearing. Everyone in the state of Oregon or anyone listens, welcome to come up and speak their mind. Now's their chance. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to ask Kate, just to clarify, if somebody has a issue with their company not paying overtime legally or other wage issues, not paying people, and they came to Boley to complain about that, is that normally held in confidence? You don't publicize the employee's name, correct?
We don't publicize it, but as a public agency, our closed cases are subject to public records, except for any protected information, obviously, like Social Security numbers or health information.
Okay.
But we don't publicize it anyway.
Follow-up, if I may. So after the case is closed, it becomes, in other words, you've investigated the company and found them, whether they've in fact done a violation of labor laws and made them go back and do back pay and all that, then that information becomes public, correct?
Other than any protected information, correct.
Okay. And
so we redact if there's,
follow up if I may. So if that employee's name is in that file, are you saying that that employee's name would still remain in that file?
Yes.
That employee's name is in that file and the employer does the bad employers in the state do a public records request, get that employee's name and turn around and fire them today? And the employee says they fired me because they got that information and they came to you, what would you do? What would Boley do then?
I think that we would likely look at that as a potential retaliation issue, and I'm not sure how, given the circumstances of a particular case, our division would find on an investigation like that.
Thank you.
Any further questions of these nice folks?
All righty. Thank you very much.
Right.
Once again, would anyone else like to speak to this bill? For or against?
All righty then. Well, we probably just need a work session next time, then.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe so, Mr. Chair. Unless you direct me otherwise, then.
No, that will be the direction. So I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 3162, and I'm going to get out of order here. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3256. Kevin, you want to tell us what we're doing here?
Let's see.
Oh, excuse me. I mean this, Kevin.
Hi.
Oh, forgive me, Representative.
Chairman Schaffler, members of the committee, before you is House Bill 3256. Comes to you from the subcommittee, actually sponsored by Representative Matthews, and comes to you from the Subcommittee on Workforce Development. Provides for the unlawful employment practice for an employer to discriminate against a person because the person serves in a uniformed service. Defines discrimination in three possible ways. First, employer is a public body and affects the employee status or rights provided by ORS 408 related to advantages given to veterans in public employment. 2 denies a person either initial employment, reemployment, retention in employment, or any other term of condition because the person has served as uniformed service, or 3 discharging, expelling, or otherwise disciplining a party because of their exercising their rights to participate in the service. The measure specifically provides that it is not an unlawful employment practice if the employer acted based on a bona fide occupational requirement reasonably necessary to the normal operation of the employer's business, and the employer's actions could not be avoided by making reasonable accommodations. The committee recommended a -1 amendment that creates an ability for AG or bully to file a complaint and also provides rather hefty penalties if that were to take place.
Okay, Representative Matthews, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative with Oregon House District 50, the great city of Gresham. Mr. Chair, I'll try to be brief because there's others that want to speak about this issue, but it's been heard already in the subcommittee. This is about, Representative Freeman and I have brought this forward with the assistance of our Attorney General, and of course we've been meeting with Bowley and also have talked with J.L. Wilson. I want to say, first of all, there is a -1 amendment. I believe that that we've kind of collectively decided that maybe the bill stands better on its own without the -1 amendment. There's a lot of concern that was brought forward from the business community, given fine amounts and whatnot, and we've decided we can still enforce this without that penalty out there. So I think it's cleaner without it. Others might testify different. I don't know. Really what this is about, and I think what charges us with this, given the current situation, is you've heard me say we have 3,000 troops that are getting ready to deploy. And many of those troops, given today's hard economic times, they're leaving jobs that they actually make more money at their current employment than they do when they join the Guard or the Reserves and when they're deployed. So when these folks return in, whether it's 18 months, 20 months, 24 months, of course, we want them to all return safely. We'd like them to be able to return to their occupation as supposed to. There is USARA, and we have 2 Oregon statutes, but none of which has any kind of an enforcement tool in place to make sure that these folks aren't discriminated against for their military service. There is a case currently right now, somewhat ashamed to say, in my district that I'm looking into, given our school district. However, it was a different superintendent. I'm hoping they come to better terms. But it's a school teacher that is a highly respected military leader in the Guard forces, and it would appear that for the last 5 years he's put up with quite a bit of what would be considered to be discrimination. If this were in effect, obviously the Attorney General, who I think is launching an investigation now, it's gotten that bad, but they would have much more teeth to deal with the situation. So really it becomes, if they deny a veteran National Guard Reserve, refuse to rehire the person, discharge from employment, deny or limit any terms and conditions of privileges of employment, and again, to discharge, expel, discipline, threaten, or otherwise retaliate against person because of their military status. This is a problem. It's one that the employer support the Guard and Reserves is working on. I do want to say that that fortunately it's not a huge problem in the state of Oregon, but potentially it could get bigger. And I say that because we have 3,000 troops, again, that are leaving. They'll be returning to their jobs safely. We want those jobs to be available to them. With respect to the workforce that steps in to fill in while they're gone, I can appreciate that, I can appreciate the employer-employee relationships that's forged over that time. But rightfully so, that job is the veteran's job that they had before their deployment. So with that being said, I know that some folks from Attorney General Kroger's office are here. Our employer support, the Guard and Reserves, will be here as well. Perhaps Bowley might chime in. And I would like to say that Bowley has been a tremendous asset in this as well. And I appreciate everybody's support.
Thank you. Any questions of the representative? And folks, just for the record, we're in a work session. I don't intend to call anybody up unless there's some technical, specific questions. This bill has been vetted in the subcommittee. This is strictly to move this bill onto the floor where it belongs, unless there are some burning questions that the experts out there need to answer. Representative Esquel, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Matthews. Good bill. I see that you've gotten some great support on this bill.
Real strong soldiers on there.
The thing that I believe, and if I think it was this bill that came out, the biggest culprit was government.
Unbelievable.
The biggest culprit is government. The private sector supports our troops almost 100%, but the biggest culprit was ourselves.
And Chair Schaffler and Representative Esquivel, thank you for bringing that forward, because I would like to point that out, that our private employers are the ones that actually are being very proactive, being very aggressive, and making sure that they follow you, Sarah. Working with the Support the Garden Reserves employer group, they are doing town halls, they are doing Chamber of Commerce meetings. We've gotten great support. It is those government jobs that people are walking away from temporarily, of course, for their call to duty. And they're coming home to find out that those jobs have been awarded to somebody else. And again, you know, personally being a union president, I don't like to bump anybody or have anybody laid off. But the bottom line is, if you're on that bottom of the list and that job was created by a vacancy due to a deployment, you know, we cannot penalize our people for serving this great country. That's just not right. And so I think we need to keep those things in place and continue to protect this. And I think this does that.
Thank you. Any further questions of the representative? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, just as in the subcommittee, I of course, totally support the intent of this bill and where it's going. But in subcommittee, I also express some concerns about whether or not we're creating duplicative services or oversight, you know, with the Attorney General. And I just want to make sure we're not circumventing the civil rights process through BOLI. That's my only concern. Thank you. But fully support the bill.
Yeah. All right. Any further questions or comments to the good representative? Well, come on up here, and I'll entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Someone like to make a motion today?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3256. Is it as amended?
No, it's as is.
As is to the House floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Cannon moves House Bill 3256 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition to the bill?
To the motion, the bill.
Seeing none, so moved. Representative Matthews, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
I'd like to, yes, co-carry it if I could with Representative Freeman.
That'd be just fine. Thank you very much. I'm going to close work session House Bill 3256, and I'm going to wait for the smartest person to get up here to make sure I'm going in the right order. We're just going to choose way down the order now.
If you want to, Mr. Chair, yes, I do.
I'm going to open work session on House Bill 2963.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we carried over House Bill 2963's work session from Wednesday as we're waiting for the fiscal analysis on the Dash Fund Amendment, which we do have. There was a fiscal statement that was issued in which it's an indeterminate, as we do not know if the deputy district attorneys would be striking, so they don't know the cost. To refresh your memory, the bill amends, prohibits assistant attorneys general and deputy district attorneys from striking. The Dash 1 amendment removes the assistant attorneys general from the measure. You are ready to go, Mr. Chair. Yes.
In that case, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Dash 1 amendments to 2963.
Representative Cannon moves Dash 1 amendment in House Bill 2963. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is Representative Matthews going to bring me right back in?
Let me check and see this.
Just won't wait a moment here. And we're ready to go on that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to jump out and take care of that one.
We can move this without.
Okay, any opposition to this? Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2963, Representative. And is there any opposition to the motion?
Two. This is for the amendment?
The amendment, yes, sir. You would be the only one opposing, Representative. Are you okay with it?
I'm okay with it.
Very good. No opposition, so I'm going to represent again.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2963 as amended to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2963 as amended to the floor to pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative?
As a former representative of local government, I'd have issues with this, and I'll be voting no.
Very good. Thank you very much. In that case, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Kennemer?
Nope.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Vice Chair Martin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Chair Schaffler.
Aye. Motion carries. Would anyone like to...
It's
Representative Matthews' bill. Forgive me, of course. Representative Matthews will carry. He's a busy man today. All right, I'm going to close the work session, and I'm going to jump down and take care of this last work session for the day. Is that all right?
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to open a work session, House Bill 2903, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we first heard House Bill 2903 on March 30th. The measure reduces the minimum time from 2 weeks to 72 hours before an employee's first day of employment that the employer must notify in the employment offer that an arbitration agreement or a non-competition agreement is required as a condition of employment. You have in front of you a -1 amendment, which replaces the bill's measure, but not the intent. It maintains the 72-hour time frame for an arbitration agreement, but maintains the current statutory time frame of 2 weeks for a non-competition agreement.
I would entertain a motion to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the -1s into House Bill 2903.
Representative Cameron moves -1 into House Bill 2903. Is there discussion on the amendment? On the motion to amend. Seeing none, so moved. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2903 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2903 to the floor as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Bart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I plan to vote no on this bill. And my actual issue with the bill, first of all, I appreciate Representative Cameron's willingness to amend it to simplify it quite a bit by removing the non-compete sections of the bill. With that said, I think my problem with the bill is actually a fundamental problem with arbitration agreements in the employment context. And this bill will essentially, but we can't actually address that here at the state level. I believe it's preempted by the Federal Arbitration Act. With that said, I do believe this bill will essentially enhance and expand the enforcement of arbitration agreements in employment contracts. And accordingly, I plan to vote no.
Very good. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, am going to be a no vote. I think that standard practice or at least convention would dictate that 2 weeks notice for an employee to an employer for a change of jobs, and I would expect the same courtesy going in the opposite direction. So
thank you. Any further discussion? All righty then. And I appreciate you guys' concern, especially from a labor perspective. I definitely appreciate the concern, although I will be voting aye. With that, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Kenneberg?
Aye.
Representative Colby?
No.
Representative Enfield?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
No.
Vice Chair Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
No.
Chair Schaffler?
Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer to carry this bill?
It's sure.
Oh, it's your bill. Or it's Ed Cameron. As long as I don't got to do it.
I thought you were going to have Vice Chair Barton carry it.
If he would have voted aye, I would have. Hey, Representative Barton, is there someone in the audience today you'd like to introduce?
Absolutely not, Mr. Chair. Actually, my father is here today, Mr. Yeah. Chair. He's gotten me in trouble many times throughout my life. He just finished a trial and is in town for the day.
Well, welcome, Mr. Barton.
A shameful.
You see?
Hey, order.
Hey, Mr. Chair. I don't have any friends. So this
hey, you have friends, Representative. That's simply not the truth. Okay, enough of all that. Well, welcome, Mr. Barton. Good to have you here. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3132.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 3132 classifies physicians and nurses that are employed by the Oregon State Hospital as police officers for purposes of benefits under the public employees retirement system. The measure applies to all service in position, whether it's rendered before, on, or after the operative date of the measure. If the person is serving in the current position on the measure's effective date, the operative date in the measure is established as July 1st, 2011. And members in front of you should be a information informational memo from PERS with some background information.
Very good, thank you. I'd like to call up Mary Botkin, Joe Thurman, Frank Warner, and Roy Orr, if you want to just sit on deck.
We'll get you up there when we get some room for you. Mary, if you're ready, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Botkin. I'm here today representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We are here today to encourage you to move the doctors and nurses who work at the Oregon State Hospital into police and fire, into the police and fire category for PERS. Just in way of background, police and fire was established as a way to acknowledge particularly dangerous jobs, or acknowledge that we ask public employees to do some jobs that they are not going to be capable to do of doing for an entire 30-year career. And this allows folks to retire a little earlier and give them a little higher benefit. There is no other group of workers that we represent that deserve this acknowledgement more than the doctors and nurses that we represent over at the Oregon State Hospital. It is, I don't know how many of you have ever been at the State Hospital. It is, without question, the scariest, most unpredictable and violent workplace we represent. I have been to every prison. I have been to all the youth correctional facilities. I have never feared for my personal safety once in those environments. I have been to the state hospital with the two gentlemen sitting on each side of me. And from the moment I walked through those doors till the moment I walked out, I feared for my life. I have never been in an environment or in a work site that was scarier to me personally or professionally than that environment. I don't know how these people do it. I want to say that over and over, we have done everything we can as their union to make this a better place, to make it a better place for the people who work there, and to make it a better place for the people who live there and expect to get treatment. We are here again today asking that you acknowledge that these folks work in an environment that nobody can work in for 30 years. And they can't, I mean, it's unrealistic to think that they're going to be there for 30 years and work until they're nearly 60 years old in this environment. And we do not live under the illusion that police and fire retirement is going to make life better all day long, every day for them. But what it does do is it gives them some acknowledgement, and it allows them to move out of that environment sooner. We know that the doctors that work over there are between $20,000 and $30,000 under market. We know that our nurses are somewhere around 20% under market. We know that our nurses and doctors could earn probably twice what they earn there if they went into private practice and provided Valium to neurotic soccer moms and stressed out businessmen. I can't imagine why they do this, other than the fact that these folks went into the work to make a difference. And if you want to make a difference, the place you make a difference is someplace like the Oregon State Hospital. And every day, they make a difference in somebody's life and give them some hope for recovery. Then finally, I can't not acknowledge the fact that this bill costs $3 million. We understand that it costs money. We understand times are tough. The doctors and nurses at the Oregon State Hospital are going to be asked to take the same 22 furlough days that everybody else is being asked to take. And, you know, even though we haven't come to a complete agreement yet, I know from my experience with these individuals that they will step up to the plate and do what they need to do to make things right. So we pushed this out. We pushed this out to the next biennium, understanding that there is a challenge in the state budget this year. I deal with that every day down the hall. as do many of you in this room, or all of you in this room. And what we're asking is that we get the policy on the record, and that we fund it later when we can afford to fund it, and that these folks understand that they will not be eligible until such time as funding loosens up in the state and the economy improves. We think the folks that we represent over there are worth $3 million. We think the work they do is worth $3 million. And with that, I would like to introduce the committee to Joe Thurman, who is the president of our nurses local, and Frank Warner, who is one of our nurses and has been one of my guiding angels, both of them, as we walked through the state hospital on more than one occasion.
Before we go to these gentlemen, you know, I think they're worth it. I think the $3 million is a hump. We're not going to get over this session. But your testimony leads me to the conclusion that if it's that scary, we're probably not giving you the staff and resources to adequately take care of these folks over there. And I'm not going to comment on moms and business people. I'll walk away from that. Go ahead, guys.
My name is Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Joe Thurman. I'm a registered nurse at Oregon State Hospital. I've been the president there of ASTME 3295 since 2001. I've testified many times over four sessions on different issues regarding the hospital and safety issues at the hospital. There's been a lot of changes in the last 10 years, but one thing continues to be ignored at the hospital, and that's the stress level and the violent environment that's every day. Like Mary alluded to, she was scared to death when she went through, but we kind of get desensitized to it because we do it so often. But what ends up happening, you'll look in your packets, and I'm not going to read this verbatim, but the information is in there. We did a private survey with our international, and 100% of the registered nurses said that they had witnessed threats of violence. 91% had themselves been a victim of physical violence at least once, and over 65% required immediate medical attention. That's not okay. That's not okay. The state hospital's own central safety committee, because I sit on it, so I know, is saying that this year they're predicting 361 assaults on staff. That's just behavior assaults. That's not total injuries. Injuries are over 600. But just behavior assaults are 361, and that's an improvement over last year. That's not okay. If you look at the Department of Corrections, and I don't have the data on it, Mary's probably more familiar with it than I am, but I do know people that work there. This doesn't happen there. It's not near this high. Probably between 10, what you were saying, between 5 and 10% of the people belong at the prison and not in the hospital. They're in the hospital because of meth-induced psychosis and different things along those lines, but they take no medication. And those are the ones that that do about 90 to 95% of the assaults and cause the biggest stress for employees there. I myself have been hit, bitten, spit on, threatened. I had a very good friend of mine who was severely sexually assaulted 3 years ago. It was bad. And she's still recovering from it, has PTSD, has to go to counseling and stuff. If you look in your packet, you'll see a report that myself, the governor's office, and I put AMH, which if everybody doesn't know what it is, I had to think about it for a few minutes. It's Addictions and Mental Health. It's a division of DHS put together. And the people on that committee that wrote that report cited that one of the problems was wages and retirement. I feel like the retirement piece is more of an acknowledgement of what we do at the state hospital, and it gives us a way to not kill yourself while you're working there, maybe, and shoot for something. What I'm hoping that it does is attract some younger people into the career. Yes, we do need more staff. We need a lot of different things. We need a different environment, a lot of things. But nursing staff are the ones that are required to do all the physical restraining at the state hospital. It's not the PhDs, not the social workers, it's not janitors, housekeepers, no one else but nursing staff. So therefore, we are the ones that suffer 95% of those injuries. And that's just not okay. The average length of an RN at Oregon State Hospital, in that data, is 9.7 years. That's not good. In most places, they're a lot longer, 20 years at least. I myself have two bad knees, a torn rotator cuff, a bad back, and I feel like they are the effects of working there for the last 10 years. I can't prove it because it's... I can't say that word.
Cumulative.
Yes, that word. I can't prove it because they just come on slowly. But they've gotten to the point where I'm having a difficult time walking, and I'm going in today, actually, for surgery on my shoulder. I stay because I enjoy working with the mentally ill. But I'm looking into moving into an area that with less patient contact because of the physical wear and tear on my body. I just can't do it anymore. I'm also a PROACT trainer, and I don't know if you guys know what that is. That's Professional Assault Crisis Trainer. And I've done that for the last, well, since the hospital implemented it, so probably about 6-8 years. And that's teaching people how to intervene with serious incidents and keep them from going to the point of violence with crisis communications. But it also teaches people how to go to that point of violence when necessary and do it in a safe manner so people hopefully don't get hurt. Having said that, what I just said is the only ones that are required to take all the courses are nursing staff. No one else in the hospital is required to take the whole thing except nursing staff. I've had janitors stand around while we're wrestling with someone on the floor and say we're told not to help. It's not okay. I'm also a member of the Northwest Public Safety Committee, which represents Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, and Montana. And we meet once a year. I've done that now for the last 5 years. And that is primarily, well, almost entirely other than me, police officers, corrections officers, 911 dispatchers, and that group of people. And when they find out what I do for a living, they tell me wholeheartedly they'd never do it. It's too dangerous. And these are people that are in the public sector that work in dangerous jobs. And what's funny about it is I've talked to several of them about police and fire, and they can't believe we don't have it. Of all the agencies in the state, I think you guys should really take a look at the data I've got there for you. But also take a look at, all you have to do is read the newspaper nowadays. We're in it so often, so I mean, I'm sure most of you have read it. I think that my constituents deserve it. I do. And we're willing to wait because we know the state is in dire straits right now in their coffers. We know that. But I think it needs to be put in place, and I do believe that the members need it.
Thank you. Sir, go ahead.
My name is Frank Warner. I'm a registered nurse at Oregon State Hospital. I'm the chief steward and also the vice president of the local nurses union. And Joe's pretty much said everything that I was going to say, so I won't burden you with my testimony. But I will say I am the one who most of our employees come to when they have issues, when there's a problem with behavioral management or they're injured. So I'm here to answer any questions that you may have of just the inner workings of the hospital.
Well, first of all, having grown up in a home that was racked with mental illness, I just want to thank you for your service. And you're right, those people out there do deserve, the patients in the hospital do deserve better. And you deserve better, and I think we need more resources. We're in a cutting mode. Before I leave this, people talk about lean government. I've been in this building for 7 years now. When I first walked in, lean government, efficiencies, contract out, all this business. Well, we're going to get a good taste of lean government. And on the other side of the dial, don't cut any trees, don't dig any gravel, don't build any manufacturing, don't have any flexible land use, don't have a tax-coded incentive to attract investment that creates family wage jobs, that creates revenue. You got people on the extremes that screwed this whole place up. That's why we don't, and now with economic downturn to boot, that's why we don't have the resources. So, but I do want to thank you for your service. I couldn't do it either, but I'm grateful you do. Now, any questions of these good people? Representative Edwards, then Witt, then Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of clarifying questions. It looks like this bill applies to employees at the Oregon State Hospital, given that there is a new state mental health hospital being built in Salem, another one that's slated to be built in my district, and then 16-bed facilities, smaller community-based facilities. Which of those facilities would this apply to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, this would apply to the classification of employees regardless of where they worked.
Okay. Because we're going to be dealing with the same people.
Well, that, and that, Mr. Chair, follow.
Yes, please, go ahead.
That's the clarification I'm looking for. Is it the classification of employee, or is it the facility? And I was just scanning the bill, and I it just said employees of the Oregon State Hospital. So I didn't know if that is a classification or if that's a location. I mean, that sounds like a location to me.
I don't think that's the intent of it. Yeah. I think it's to cover the people that actually do the work with the clientele that we work with. Okay. Because they're, regardless, they're still, most of them are adjudicated by the criminal justice system.
Yeah. So I see heads being shaking no in the background. So you may want to get that clarified before this bill moves forward. So
we'll make sure that it covers, because it was certainly our intent to cover the classification of employee regardless of their specific work site.
Thank you, Representative Witt. Then Representative Teacher, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I've been exceedingly naive. I didn't realize that we were sending nurses into a combat zone. And based on what your testimony here today, that appears to be the case. I suspect that I have a fairly good grasp of our state's responsibility as an employer to provide safe working conditions. That would be grounds for me under some circumstances to want to investigate that further. But I'm also concerned, Mr. Chairman, if we are, as a state, committing people to an institution, what obligation we have to provide residents with a safe living environment. And I think this is just the flip side of the coin to those who work here. So I'm very concerned, and I would like, these probably are not the people to answer that question, but I would like to have that question answered by someone, Mr. Chairman.
And before I go to Representative Thatcher, you know, I've toured the state prison, and there's folks there that belong in the hospital, and there are people in the hospital that belong in the prison.
Yep.
Now, I'm not on any of those committees, and I'm grateful for it. I do vote on these things, and I share your concern, and I think that's the beauty of these hearings. We all get a lesson in areas that normally this committee doesn't deal with. So, Representative Thatcher,
if I can,
yes, please go ahead.
Representative Witt, you bring up an interesting challenge that we face. It's a pretty significant constitutional question. It's very interesting because the only people in state institutions who have a constitutional right to a safe environment are the inmates in the penitentiaries and the clients at the Oregon State Hospital. They have a constitutional right to a safe environment. And one of the challenges that we have, and I handed out sort of our plan for a more safe environment at the state hospital, one of the challenges that we face is that, and Mr. Orr can testify to this as well when he comes up, less than 0.5% of the clients at the Oregon State Hospital create all the violence and perpetuate all of the injuries or most of the injuries that are against staff or other clients. We now have a federal court decree saying that you're going to do certain things at the state hospital and the legislature will have to meet those needs. The problem that we face is that while we have advocates inside the institution now advocating for the clients, too often what we witness, and I don't want these gentlemen to say it because, you know, I don't work for the state, they do. Too often what we see is we see the advocates advocating for the people who are creating the problem rather than advocating for the quiet client who's hovering in a corner in fear. And, you know, at this point what we're trying to figure out is how do we as advocates for both our members and our members who see themselves as advocates for their clients advocate for the client who's hovering in fear over the rights of the client who is creating the violent environment. So, I mean, we're just, and we're working with OROSHA to do some things that hopefully will make this better. And we're doing it with our employer. Let me say, this is not something we're fighting with OSH over.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I can only imagine it'd be like living your own scary movie every day. That's my picture. But to me, it seems like if you're trying to attract people to get into this career, it seems like your everyday, your paycheck would be, you know, what are you actually going to get paid from week to week would be a bigger attractant than saying, well, you know, some day yonder you're going to get a higher retirement. So I'm wondering why you're not asking for higher pay, notwithstanding the budget crisis, higher pay when it can be afforded rather than retirement or maybe a combination thereof.
Can I speak to that? Absolutely, we agree with you. And you guys have done, the state has done a healthcare study that shows that we are behind in wages. We know that. But we also know the state is in a severe budget crisis right now. And most nurses, just by the nature of who we are, and we're advocates and for the patients just by what we do, we know that right now is not a good time to hit up the state for more money than what we need. But you're absolutely right. We do need more if we're going to attract people. If you read the thing that we put out with the deans of several universities, including Portland State and everybody else, that is one of the things that's cited, is low wages and bad, inadequate retirement. What we need to do is we need to attract people in there and then have a good environment for them to learn in. What I've seen is nurses walk in the front door and out the back.
I would much rather, if I had my druthers, pay right up front, so we don't end up back in 2003 or some smaller incremental increase in your retirement and a larger increase in wages. Just pay as you go. It's a simple philosophy. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It occurs to me, when you paint this picture, I've never been to our state hospital, and I'd like to go. And I don't know if that would perhaps if the committee in the interim would like to visit, or it could just be me going, or anyone would like to. But I would like to see exactly what we're dealing with.
Good, we welcome you. We've had several members go through tours. We've actually had a couple of members work on a floor for 2 hours, which was interesting because they went incognito.
You should go. You should go. Not having people know who you are.
Yeah.
I toured Representative Clem through, and that's what we did. He came in jeans and a t-shirt. He was with me. I just introduced him as somebody who was with me, and he stayed for about 4 hours on the floor. And with Roy's blessing, we're more than willing to take you through.
But we do have to tell administration who you are.
Yeah.
But it's better. It's better if clients don't sort of know. They react differently if they think that you're somebody important.
With that, seeing no further questions, I'm going to thank you for coming in. We will be, I hope we get something done someday. I just don't think it's going
to
be.
Mr. Chair, it would be great if you could just move it down to Ways and Means.
We'll have that discussion.
Okay.
Later.
Thank you.
Mr. Orr, would you like to come up and speak to this, please? Thank you very much, and thank you for your service. Believe me.
He knows how to mention land use.
I think the mic picked it up. Go ahead, sir, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Chair Schaffler and members of the committee. My name's Roy Orr, and I'm the superintendent of Oregon State Hospital, and I have been for the last 13 months. Within the Department of Human Services and the Addictions and Mental Health Division that Nurse Thurman referred to a few minutes ago, and I'm here to testify, obviously, on House Bill 3132. I'll deviate a little bit from this testimony in light of the appreciation I'm feeling coming up here this morning for the conversation that's just taken place. I would like to cover a few parts of my testimony, which is being handed out to you now. In my view, there's no question that physicians and nurses represented by AFSCME at the state hospital are in harm's way due to the nature of their work and the environment that they work in, and that they are deserving of what's frequently referred to as fire and police benefits. 74% of the beds in Salem are designated for forensic patients alone. For their evaluation and their treatment until fit to proceed, and they are sent to us by the criminal court system, either having been adjudicated guilty except for insanity, or for testing to determine their fitness to proceed. Many of those forensic patients have committed very violent and very violent crimes and continue to be very dangerous people in our custody. Let me, for a moment here, point out oftentimes corrections comparisons are made to the state hospital. The laws of the corrections environment versus the hospital environment are dramatically different. In corrections, they have a far greater latitude in terms of confining, isolating patients. We have, in fact, far greater restrictions about how we seclude people or how we restrain people who are behaviorally disordered and for what length of time, and the staff intensity around such episodes, all because of the not at all subtle differences between being a hospital versus being an institution of corrections. I suspect you are all familiar to varying degrees of the United States Department of Justice findings, which arrived on the governor's desk approximately a month before I started in this position back in February of 2008. I think it's fair to say that from 360 degrees, the state hospital was found in violation of historic and chronic understaffing, chronic overuse of overtime, sometimes mandated overtime. Mandates is a very commonly used word on that campus. Because just to maintain what we consider to be minimal staffing standards around the clock, we have to force employees by mandating them to take back-to-back shifts. That has been a chronic pattern and a chronic means of achieving what we call minimal staffing standards. Let me, for a second, just point out that last summer, July of 2008, we had a very well-publicized escape from the secure perimeter of the hospital, and a patient who went on a rampage in the community for a good bit of the night. I had three staff taking care of over 40 patients on that ward that night. One staff left the ward for a break. I then had a ratio of two staff to 40 patients, many of whom were up and moving that night, not in bed, not asleep. In fact, we have restrictions on our ability to send patients to bed because that's a form of movement restriction in a hospital environment, again, opposed to a corrections environment. We, in short, for 125 years, we have made do in a facility and in a variety of other buildings on the north side of Center Street that are completely inadequate for contemporary psychiatric care. And for generations, we have either been neglected, overlooked, or not simply considered as we should have been appropriately for the kinds of staffing which allows us to then engage in training because we have enough people on the wards, on the units, so that we can send people to ongoing training. These simply have not existed for decades at the state hospital on the human side of the equation, setting the facility side aside. What that has resulted in is our finding ways to have as safe an environment as we can could have created over the last several decades. And ultimately, the use of seclusion and restraint rates that are triple the national average. It's a direct reflection of the only way when you have too few staff and too many patients and too many behavioral problems, rely on restraints, rely on the use of seclusion. And clearly, we were using them sometimes many months, on and on and on, three times the national average. A year ago, we had an RN vacancy rate at the state hospital of greater than 30%. We now have that rate down to 10%. And I think a lot of that credit goes to the legislature's good work in terms of creating a new environment for our patients and our staff, and the lure that many mental health professionals now feel attracted to the opportunity to work in a purpose-built facility in Salem. Down the road, we'll have a facility in Junction City, which will fall under the auspices of Oregon State Hospital and would be included in, I hope the language would include these discussions we're having today about fire and police to the employees there. It's frankly less clear to me that the same benefit would be extended to the 16-bed facilities that Representative Edwards spoke to earlier. But both Salem and presuming Junction City's progress, the benefit would extend to them. Let me also point out, we have taken a number of steps here in the first year, not only to reduce seclusion and restraint, but to also increase our training so that we're not just putting our staff, as we're trying to build our numbers, in harm's way. And we are tracking very closely our assault data and our workers' comp data, and we have a number of committees that are addressing the assaultive environment that we have. I personally believe we have the bar set way too low, and we have too many behaviorally disordered people who are admitted to the state hospital that most state hospitals around the country do not find. These are not people who are classically mentally ill. They are simply behaviorally disordered. And yet, we find ourselves having to treat them in a hospital environment as opposed to a corrections environment, and that creates a highly assaultive environment, a very difficult to treat. Medications and such traditional approaches to people with behavioral disorders are not effective, whereas those approaches are effective with people with mental illness. We had a 50% rate of vacancies in our physician ranks a year ago. We have an extraordinarily successful relationship with OHSU, where we're recruiting physicians through OHSU to work at our hospital. We now have 8 physicians on the ground in Portland and in Salem. And we have a pipeline full of recruits that we, through the state and OHSU, have recruited that I'm pleased to tell you that it appears that by summer we may have all of our physician vacancies filled. So things are changing at the state hospital. They're not all going to change as quickly as some of us would like them to change. Many of them will take years. The culture change will take a great many years and a lot of new staff on the ground to bring about those changes. Let me come back to the point, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could. I'm very supportive. And I think it's another oversight at the state hospital that our nurses and doctors have not been covered by fire and police historically. But I would also say to you that they're not the only ones who ought to be covered. That compounds the fiscal impact of this. We have a lot of very direct care staff who are represented by our SEIU local, our mental health therapist series employees who are equally impacted by this assaultive environment. So while I'm in favor of this conceptually, the truth of the matter is we have a good many more people at the Oregon State Hospital who ought to be included in fire and police, and I ask you to give that consideration as well. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, thank you for coming, and I appreciate your testimony. And I will ask the co-chair, Buckley, if he wants to just at least have this discussion. I can't promise you. We're not sending things to Ways and Means that aren't going to happen. Correct. If we can avoid it. That being said, I think it
it merits conversation. And then it's been said that, I said earlier, I toured the state penitentiary, and the doctor managing that ward said some of these folks belong in the hospital. And then I hear, which I believe you, some of these folks belong in the prison. How do you, and then you also said, and I believe you, that there's patients in the hospital that other states would have in the prison. Mm-hmm. How do you manage this? How do you, do you communicate with the state penitentiary and the courts on determining who belongs where? There's a lot there, and I will expect you to, you could probably write a book on it, but how does that work?
Mr. Chair, members...
You want to get back to me on that, it's okay, too.
It would be far more accurate and far more far more detailed if I could.
That'd be great.
I think it does require some statutory change. Mm-hmm. A lot of it happens in the courtrooms around the counties before we have any knowledge of a patient. And as I often say, the front door of the state hospital doesn't swing. There's no door on the hinges. It's wide open. We have no control over admissions to our hospital, which has only created the tremendous and frankly at times inhumane overcrowding that we experience at the state hospital. When we have I know of no other hospital that has no control over its admitting process. It will require some statutory change.
Right. Well, okay. I don't think that'll go through this committee, but I look forward to that conversation too, sadly. And then it was said earlier, other staff members are not allowed to get involved. Strictly the nurses deal with these tragic occurrences of violence. Would it take a statutory change to allow for other staffers? I'm sure it would take a tremendous amount of training that they're currently, if you're a janitor, for example, not receiving. And then one more thing. Do you, when you're hiring folks to work there, they must go through some evaluation process, I'd imagine, because you just can't hire somebody off the street to do that. I mean, just because you have a nursing degree, God bless nurses, that doesn't mean I would just hire any old nurse to come on in there. So there's two questions, and then I'll open it up to questions.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, historically there's not been much in the way of physical testing. With vacancy rates like the state hospital has had, if a person has the credentials, historically they've pretty well been hired. That's changing. We simply have to have some physical threshold that employees have to be able to cross or clear in order to work in such an environment. I think earlier testimony slightly misspoke when it said that RNs, nurses, are the only ones who can intervene. In fact, we think of our nursing division as including a very large number of very important direct line staff in our MHT series. We have mental health therapists, mental health therapy techs, mental health therapists ones and twos and so on. These people are critically important in intervening in assaultive environments. And these are, in fact, the folks I referred to earlier, Chair Schaffler, as being represented by SEIU and who I think clearly ought to be considered in this as well.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Orr?
Well, it's not a question. It's an editorial, I guess. Mr. Chair, I think that there may be some value to sending this on to the Ways and Means Committee, and the reason I say that is because I'm a big believer in context for making, we may be making one decision here, but if we don't have the entire context for that decision, we may not be making the best decision. And because there are policy discussions about how we treat the mentally ill in this state versus behaviorally disordered, and I've had some of those discussions, not just in the autism work that I'm doing, but also because I have a mental health facility, state hospital, coming into my district, and I've had some discussions with folks on both sides of this issue that have different philosophical views about what we ought to be doing, and I've been enlightened as to the enormous cost difference as well, treating folks in one type of facility versus another. I think that this would be a piece of context that folks that are making those type of policy considerations should
should be brought onto, or this should be brought onto the radar as well, if it hasn't been already, and maybe it, maybe they are considering that, but this is a cost that needs to be considered in the totality of that decision-making process as well. So, and I'm glad that we're not having those policy discussions here in this committee, but this is something that should be considered in the totality of the issue.
And Representative, it's, if it's the desire of this committee to move this down to Ways and Means for that conversation, believe me, I have no problem sending that message to them, and I know you will too, and we can just follow up on it. So, but just because something goes to Ways and Means doesn't mean it's going to happen. I don't want anybody getting their hopes up. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Representative Edwards actually just sort of took the words right out of my mouth. I believe this, it would be very important for this committee to go ahead and send this down to Ways and Means, just as alerting them that we think this is an important consideration, knowing that, you know, it probably won't happen, but this needs to be on their radar screen, and this is the first step in getting it there, and maybe next session it'll be even more important. I think it would be a good consideration for them to know that this committee thinks that this is extremely important for them to consider.
Well, I think that makes it clear for me in my direction. Representative Matthews?
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, and I agree with Representative Holvey and Representative Edwards. I guess if we were to do that, I suppose a lot of your testimony has questions in my mind now about the 300 versus, is it 1,200 additional or 1,200 total?
It would be closer to 1,200 total.
Okay, and so follow up, Mr.
Please,
Chair?
Go ahead.
So if we were to consider that the $3 million in contributions for the next biennium would be for the 300, would we multiply that by four to cover every all your right. staff?
Yeah.
The PERS department says yes, we would. So there we go.
Okay, so Mr.
Yes,
Chair?
Please.
So I guess my question would be, I understand your desire in what the staff does. Does it actually cause a division of your staff if we were to do 300 now and try to add to the future later? Which, again, I'm asking the question because we're going to have this conversation, I'm sure, and I'd like to kind of be informed as to what the position would be here. I hate to divide your group. Tough job.
Representative Matthews, thank you for that sentiment. Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, as the Honorable Chair said earlier, this is a public meeting, and people who feel strongly about these issues had the right to come in here and testify. I'm a little surprised others aren't here, in fact, to your point. I would say it may create something of a division, but if we can make progress on this issue, it enhances our ability to recruit down the road, and we can deal with the remaining staff at another date. So if it's the legislature's desire to deal with this in an incremental fashion, I'll deal with the fallout from it.
I appreciate that.
And in defense of our colleagues on Ways and Means, they have an impossible job.
Yeah.
So I just want to, you know, I don't want in any way, shape, or form anyone to think that I'm looking down my nose at them for not passing this legislation this year, because, matter of fact, they literally have an impossible job to do. They're making impossible choices that no human being should have to make, and I've already went over the reasons why they're in that situation. Any further questions?
Chair Schaffler, if I could, just in closing, I would like to extend an invitation to any member of the legislature to come and tour the facility and help us erase some of the stigma associated with it and its invisibility out there on Center Street. I firmly believe, and I'm not just cheerleading here, I firmly believe we are making important strides in reducing the assaultive environment. We're working within our antiquated facilities. We are making progress in hiring. We're taking some of these most behaviorally disordered patients, most of whom, interestingly enough, are women in our care, and creating a women's maximum intensive treatment area. that we're doing everything we can. We're not just waiting for the ribbon cutting ceremony in a new facility. The work has already begun, and Representative Cameron came out and toured our cottages, which have become our transitional facilities for patients moving closer to community living, and we appreciated that, Representative, and I would extend the invitation to any and all of you to come out, and we'd be happy to give you a tour of the facilities.
Well, thank you for that, and I've been meaning to do it, and I haven't gotten around to it. But I really want to thank you for the work you do and your service, and all that extended to your entire staff that's doing this incredible work. God bless you. Okay, without any further questions of Mr. Orr, and without seeing anyone else who wants to testify this bill today, members, I'm just going to ask Ms. Van Winkle, Teresa here, to schedule a work session for this bill and make clear to the co-chair our intentions on that and our desires, and just keep the conversation going. I think it merits being talked about, and God knows, I wish we had the money to do this and a lot more other things, which we're not going to be able to this year. But who knows?
Mr. Right. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I would like the advocates to make sure that the language is clear, that it's not just the Oregon State Hospital as defined
yes.
as a location today.
Well, I thank you for that clarification, Representative, and I think they got the message. And matter of fact, we could probably do that for... We can work on some language very quickly and get that going in the next couple days. All right, thank you very much. Anything else to give the order? I'll close the work session, and we're adjourned.